Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa. I'm your host for this hour, Ursula Rudenberg. Thanks for listening in. I hope you stay with us for the hour. We promise you always learn something about our life here in central Iowa and always have opportunity to appreciate the people, animals, and natural world we live in here a little bit more. And speaking of the natural world, at the top of the week, we usually look at the weather. So here goes. It looks like we have sun ahead of us. Clouds are expected to gradually clear with high temperatures reaching close to 50 degrees. And Tuesday should be sunny and a little cooler. That 50 degrees was today. Tomorrow's Tuesday should be sunny, a little bit cooler, peaking at around 41 degrees and getting down to around 17 degrees at night. And days are expected to continue being sunny or partly sunny for the rest of the week through the weekend, although temperatures will cool, ranging from the high to low 30s. And now is Mr. Dennis Hart is here with the roundup of Iowa in the news last week. Take it away, Dennis.
Thanks very much. I'm happy to be back here on this first Monday of the new year. I hope your year's been a good one so far. So let's get started. Here's what made news around Iowa during the first week of 2019. Hy-Vee recalled some cheesecakes from more than 100 of its stores because of the potential of salmonella contamination. The cheesecakes are made with Diamond Crystal Brand's cheesecake mix. It includes 32 varieties of cheesecakes in both 8-ounce and 32-ounce packages, with best buy dates from December 6, 2018 through this coming Friday. The mix was distributed to 117 of Hy-Vee's grocery stores in Iowa and 7 other states. Customers should get rid of the cakes or return them for a full refund. Also last week, a man from eastern Iowa became the first flu-reported death in the state for the 2018-2019 season. The Iowa Department of Public Health said the man had underlying conditions or other contributing factors to his death. He was between 41 and 60 years old. The death came just days after word that cases of the flu were starting to show up in Iowa, but so far, the infection rate seemed to be lower than it is across the nation. It's still early in the flu season, and it's too soon to tell how effective this year's flu vaccine will be. Still on the health front, the Des Moines Register reported last week that a central Iowa man underwent surgery for prostate cancer, only to learn later that he did not really have cancer. The patient, Ricky Lee Hewitt of Panora, sued the Iowa clinic, whose pathologist admitted mixing up tissue sample slides from Hewitt and another patient in 2017. The clinic's chief executive officer said the medical facility wants to resolve the lawsuit in mediation. Turning to money matters, experts said last week that Iowans will continue paying, on average, less than $2 a gallon for gasoline for at least the next few weeks. Regular grade gas cost $1.98 a gallon in Iowa last week on average. But prices usually go up at the end of February, and some experts say by the end of May, prices may have jumped to nearly $3 a gallon. But while gas prices are low right now, other costs are going up. Iowans can expect to pay a bit more for video streaming services, online purchases, and for ride-sharing services starting this month. The reason? The state's new tax on internet purchases and on certain new economy services starts this month. In politics last week, Democrat Elizabeth Warren made her first trip to Iowa since 2014, just days after she launched a presidential exploratory committee. She made several stops around the state, saying that systems are tilted in favor of big companies, corporations, and lobbyists, and not the American middle class. At one of her stops in Storm Lake, a Minnesota man was arrested after he caused a disturbance. Police said the man became vocal and aggressive and tried to assault others in the crowd. The Ames Tribune reported that one of Warren's stops was here in Ames, at a meeting with Democratic Party members that was not announced to the press. Meanwhile, Iowa 4th District Republican Congressman Steve King announced he will hold town halls in every county his district represents. That's a change from his town hall strategy in recent years, when he said he held fewer town halls because of fears over safety and potential protests. But now the congressman says he will hold town halls in all 39 counties in the 4th District this year. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds made news last week when she said she's going to take her time to finalize appointments for the state's various agencies. Those comments came one day after she announced the hiring of Paul Trombino III to serve as the governor's chief operations officer. He's a former director of the Iowa Department of Transportation. Also last week, billboards in support of abortion featuring women who say they have had the procedure started going up in Des Moines. And Planned Parenthood of the Heartland said more of its Say Abortion billboards will go up in other Iowa cities this month. Planned Parenthood said the billboards are aimed at breaking what it called the cycle of silence and stigma around abortion in Iowa. Also last week, a federal judge ordered settlement talks in a lawsuit filed by black farmers from Mississippi and Tennessee who claim an Iowa company sold them faulty, low-yield soybean seeds because of their race. The district court judge told the farmers and the Stein Feed Company to begin mediation in a lawsuit alleging the company conspired with a seed salesman to sell thousands of dollars worth of defective seeds to the farmers because they are black. In other news, survivors of sexual abuse by Catholic clergy called for the resignation of Cardinal Daniel DiNardo, the former bishop of Sioux City, from his post as president of the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. DiNardo, who is also the Archbishop of Galveston, Houston, has been accused of covering up abuse cases in both Iowa and Texas. Last fall, he led a delegation of Catholic leaders to meet with Pope Francis about incidents of sex abuse by the clergy. Meanwhile, an eastern Iowa firefighter died this past Saturday after an explosion at a grain processing plant in Clinton. The firefighter was identified as 33-year-old Eric Hossett. Also Saturday, one person died in a kayaking accident along the Des Moines River. It took place in the area of Red Rock Dam near South Tailwater on Saturday. In Ankeny last week, a man was found dead after an apparent suicide, one that prompted officials to order some residents to shelter in place. The incident took place in the room of a business on Southwest Linden Street. A gunshot had been heard, and nearby residents were ordered to take shelter for a time. In Cedar Falls, two people were shot and wounded early on New Year's morning near the University of Northern Iowa campus. Someone fired multiple shots into a crowd with a handgun. Two people were struck and rushed to local hospitals. The injuries were not life-threatening. Meanwhile, the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation was asked to help the Webster County Sheriff's Office with the investigation of an officer's use of deadly force in the pursuit of a suspect. It took place just outside Fort Dodge when a deputy saw a vehicle matching the description given and tried to stop it. The vehicle did not stop, and gunshots came from the suspect vehicle. Law enforcement officers returned fire, the suspect vehicle drove into a field, and the suspect was found dead inside. Also last week, an 18-year-old Johnston man was facing charges for his role in a crash that killed a 38-year-old Ankeny woman and injured two passengers. Charles Hunter Everman was charged with vehicular homicide after authorities said he had been driving twice the posted speed limit, seconds before his vehicle collided with one driven by Samantha Jo Kriegel of Ankeny. Kriegel died of her injuries in the November 5th crash. In northwest Iowa, a woman died after her sport utility vehicle struck a deer. It took place on Iowa Highway 31, about 2 miles east of Quimby. The Cherokee County Sheriff's Office said they think the driver was injured when the deer slammed through her windshield, and then her vehicle ran into a roadside ditch. The driver died after being flown to a Sioux City hospital. It was the second time in 2 weeks in Iowa that a vehicle had slammed into a deer, resulting in the death of someone inside the vehicle. Still on traffic matters, an Iowa man was rescued from his car last week after he drove into a ditch and the vehicle got pinned between the banks of a creek. The Fayette County Sheriff's Office said it took place in the Volga River Recreation Area. The man escaped with minor injuries, but his car was a total loss. Also last week, 18 people were charged in connection with a Thanksgiving night brawl at the Indianola Skate Park. 14 are juveniles, 4 are adults. Authorities said a fight had broken out between two juveniles and a large group of people gathered to watch it. Most of the charges involved the fight spectators, who were charged with unlawful assembly. And last week, authorities said an 18-year-old Norwalk man sexually abused a young girl multiple times while she was between the ages of 6 and 12. Jason Darren Crow was booked into Polk County Jail on a charge of second-degree sexual abuse. His preliminary hearing is scheduled for this coming Wednesday. Meanwhile, a Clive man was charged with kidnapping this past Friday after he took his niece from his mother's Des Moines daycare. Authorities said 29-year-old James Yee Davies took the child without consent after several people tried to stop him. He drove the child to his residence, refused to give her back to her family, then drove the girl to a park and handed her to the first person he saw. Also last week, a southeast Iowa couple convicted of locking their adopted 7-year-old son in their basement at night have filed appeals. Last October, 44-year-old Heidi Feems and her 45-year-old husband Justin were found guilty of misdemeanor child endangerment. Both were sentenced to 180 days in jail, but must serve only 60 days. Heidi Feems had told investigators she and her husband had made what she called the wrong choice when they moved their son from his upstairs bedroom to the basement because he had urinated on the carpet and in his bed. College football made news around Iowa last week, on New Year's Day to be exact, when the University of Iowa defeated Mississippi State 27-22 in the Outback Bowl in Tampa, Florida. The Hawkeyes finished their season with a record of 9 wins and 4 losses. And college basketball made a splash here in Ames this past Saturday when Iowa State's men's team played the University of Kansas at Hilton Coliseum. As you might have heard, Iowa State won 77-60. The women's team went on the road to play Kansas and won 82-73. And one more note before we go, and it's a note about names. Unity Point Health of Des Moines has revealed the most popular baby names it saw in Des Moines last year. The overall most popular name was Jack or Jackson. Other popular baby boy names were Will or William, Oliver, Henry, Ben or Benjamin, and Owen. Popular baby girl names included Lily, Evelyn, Charlotte, Adeline, Olivia, and Nora. Those were last year's most popular names. The name of the first baby born this year in Des Moines on New Year's morning is Alonzo. My name is Dennis, and that's your summary of what made news around Iowa last week, the first week of the year 2019. I'll try to get over not having a popular name and make my way right back here on Friday with a look at what's making news in Ames. Whatever your name is, I hope you have a great week.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host for this hour, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for listening in. And thank you, Mr. Hart, for the news summary for Iowa from the last week. This past week, Planned Parenthood began a new statewide campaign to change Iowans' perception about abortion. Becca Lee, communications manager for Planned Parenthood, explained the campaign and the legal and political events leading up to it. Here's Becca.
Planned Parenthood has launched a new campaign that's designed to combat abortion stigma in the state of Iowa. This is a campaign that's focused on breaking the cycle of silence and stigma around abortion care, and we're doing this by putting up billboards in major metropolitan areas across the state. It started in Des Moines January 4th, and the first two of several billboards have gone up in Des Moines. Throughout the month of January, additional communities, including Ames, as well as Iowa City, Cedar Falls, Cedar Rapids, and Council Bluffs will see billboards appearing in their communities as well.
And what are the billboards saying?
The billboards feature actual Iowans who have had abortion procedures, and they feature messages such as, I had an abortion and I'm not apologizing for it, I had an abortion and I'm not ashamed, and I had an abortion and it was just health care.
Why are you putting these billboards up?
Access to safe, legal abortion care is central to overall reproductive health, and bodily autonomy is critical to achieving full gender equality. So Planned Parenthood has launched the Say Abortion campaign to capture and reflect the energy of Iowans who are speaking out against the state's dangerous, unconstitutional 6-week abortion ban currently blocked by court injunction.
Can you summarize briefly what the law is that you're calling dangerous?
So in May 2018, Governor Kim Reynolds signed a bill that would effectively ban safe legal abortion by making it illegal to perform an abortion once a fetal heartbeat is detected through an abdominal ultrasound, which is around 6 weeks of pregnancy. And that's before most people know that they are even pregnant. So this bill is a ban on safe legal abortion that is clearly unconstitutional and dangerous and would effectively ban all safe legal abortion in the state. And that's why Planned Parenthood, alongside the Emma Goldman Clinic of Iowa City, filed a lawsuit back in May to stop this law from taking effect.
And you're saying that it effectively makes abortion illegal because it's asking people to report a pregnancy before they're really able to know about it?
That's correct. That makes it far too early for about 94% of people who are pregnant to access that care. If this law were to go into effect, it would effectively ban safe legal abortion in the state of Iowa. Unfortunately, there are additional states and there are additional anti-choice lawmakers who are looking to Iowa as an example of legislation that they would like to pass. And even before Iowa passed the six-week ban, there was precedent for these types of laws being pushed and forced through legislatures. Ohio is one of the most recent states to try to force this through as well, kind of following in Iowa's example. So really, I mean, we're seeing dangerous trends from states that have anti-choice majorities, but we're also not backing down.
The law has been passed by the legislature and signed by the government, but it has not gone into effect because it is in the courts. Is that correct?
That is correct. The six-week abortion ban is not in effect because it has been blocked by a Polk County judge. So that law is currently blocked by court injunction, and we will continue to push our case through the court.
The Iowa Attorney General has refused to defend this law on behalf of the state of Iowa?
That is correct.
So who is defending the law?
The state has recruited counsel from the Thomas More Society. They're an anti-choice interest group. What we know is that every time a law like this has been passed, it has been thrown out immediately by the courts. So there is not a single state where there is a law like this currently in effect. In Iowa, Planned Parenthood has sued on the basis of the Iowa Constitution, which means that should that decision be appealed to the Iowa Supreme Court, the Iowa Supreme Court is the final arbiter on this current lawsuit. There is no path for this to get to the U.S. Supreme Court. And we are hoping that campaigns like Say Abortion help to shift that narrative so that politicians stop dominating the conversation and instead we listen to the real voices of real people who have had abortions and who do not regret those decisions. You know what, Planned Parenthood, we envision a culture where abortion access is understood as a basic human right, an essential part of healthcare and a normal part of life. And we really won't back down until that vision is achieved. What we're capturing is the energy of Iowans who are outraged and fearful of the current state of reproductive rights, amplify their voices, and to change our overall culture around how we talk about and how we think about abortion, which is, quite frankly, a safe, legal, common medical procedure that's been overly politicized by anti-choice lawmakers, but that really, at the end of the day, is a personal, common medical decision. And we would encourage anyone who's interested in learning more about the campaign or sharing their story, getting involved with us. We have a brand new website that is filled with storytelling and resources and factual information about abortion procedures. That website is sayabortion.org, sayabortion.org.
Becca Lee, Communications Manager for Planned Parenthood, and this is Local Talk. I'm your host for the hour, Ursula Rudenberg. More in the news with the partial shutdown of the federal government, we've been getting inquiries about how this affects areas of work in Ames that are connected to federal programs. People are wondering, where in Ames is this showing up? Where are people not being able to go to work? And it's a good question and a good opportunity to understand a little bit better how local major institutions function here in our community, as well as how the government functions. Of course, one place being asked about was the U.S. Department of Energy's Ames Laboratory at Iowa State University. So on Friday, Dr. Adam Schwartz, the director, spoke with me by phone, and I asked him if the partial federal government shutdown is affecting operations at the Ames Lab. Here's Director Schwartz.
The partial government shutdown is having absolutely no impact at this time on Ames Laboratory. We continue to conduct our science and operations without any interruption. We are almost solely funded through the Department of Energy. That's a huge advantage for Ames Laboratory. The Department of Energy remains open because their budget was appropriated and signed by the president. The Department of Energy fiscal year 2019 appropriations bill was approved by Congress and signed by the president back in September. Same thing with the Department of Defense. Those two agencies and a few others remain completely open, completely operational. All of those federal employees continue to do their jobs, and they are providing the oversight that DOE typically applies to its national laboratories like Ames Laboratory.
When you say that it's appropriated, what does that mean?
There are a dozen or so government agencies when Congress goes through all of their budget negotiations and discussions, sometimes every single agency gets their budget all at one time. That's typically called an omnibus appropriation. Other times, like what happened for fiscal year 19, which started for the government on October 1st, they split out different agencies. And in this year, Department of Energy, Department of Defense, a few other departments within the federal government, their budget bills went through Congress. They were signed into law and then signed by the president. Appropriated means that it was signed into law so that the federal government is permitted to provide funds agreed upon by Congress and ultimately signed by the president. That's what appropriated means. There were other government agencies, I think Department of Homeland Security, I think Department of Agriculture, although I'm not positive. National Science Foundation is part of one of the agencies that did not have a budget bill that was approved by Congress and signed by the president. Those agencies who do not have a budget, those are the ones that are in the partial government shutdown. Many or most of the employees within those agencies are not currently working, although there's some law enforcement and in other agencies, other critical services that those federal workers continue to be paid. So those agencies whose budgets are signed into law, those federal workers continue to work as if it's just a typical year.
If an agency's budget has been approved by Congress, they'll go ahead and continue to function during something like this.
That is correct. Exactly right. So that's why Department of Energy, there has been little or no impact whatsoever on the Department of Energy federal workforce or any of the contractors that work with or for the Department of Energy.
So the Ames Lab is nothing has changed.
For Ames Lab, nothing has changed. We have a good solid budget for this year. We continue to do our science and looking forward to a good year. So in the case of the Department of Energy, they have a budget. They have employees who are able to distribute those funds, and those funds have been distributed to Ames Laboratory, the other national laboratories and universities and other places that received the Department of Energy funding.
Thank you very much for speaking with me on Friday afternoon.
I appreciate you giving me a call and giving me a chance to talk about what the impacts of this partial government shutdown are this year. And in our particular case with the Department of Energy, we are fortunate and we are operating as if that part of government is open, which it is.
You've been hearing from Adam Schwartz, who's director of the Ames Laboratory. Sarah Nusser is the vice president for research at Iowa State University, and I asked her next what the effect the shutdown is having on research at Iowa State. Mr. Schwartz mentioned that not all of the areas for science research grants were being covered by the Department of Energy, so we were wondering, and numerous people asked the station, too, like what exactly is happening to Iowa State. So we started our conversation with the importance of federal funding for research at Iowa State University.
We receive about $170 million each year from the federal government, so it's an important source of research funding. Federal funding represents 70 to 75% of our research funding. We receive federal funding for other areas as well, but very important to the research side.
The National Science Foundation didn't have the appropriation that the Department of Energy had.
Ames Laboratory is funded by the Department of Energy, and that agency was funded earlier in the fall, as was, for example, the National Institutes of Health. So any sort of awards that we might get from Department of Energy or the National Institutes of Health would still be flowing through. And agencies such as the National Science Foundation, NASA, and other agencies that don't have funding where their bills have not gone through yet. Those are the agencies where the federal staff are not present and we don't have transactions with them at this time.
Is that affecting Iowa State?
At this point, it's pretty minimal because we are still on winter break, so people are starting to trickle back. And when we have these federal shutdowns for agencies that are not funded, and part of them are funded. We are allowed to work as long as we have funds available from the awards that we have been given. All of these agencies have enabled us, you know, broadly to continue work, even mm-hmm. though they don't have staff working right now. The research is continuing because when awards are provided to us, we're given authorization to spend. They have not rescinded that authorization. So if there isn't a stop work order, then people can continue. And that's generally the situation when we have a budget impasse like this.
What exactly is a stop work order do?
When we are given awards, we are given basically permission to spend money against the award. It is possible for an agency to say that they would like you to stop work. But really, we have very, very little of this happen during these kinds of budget breakdowns. We do not generally get very many of those during this time period.
As somebody who's not involved with this, this is what I'm picturing. Tell me if it's correct. Somebody gets a grant, and so they're essentially spending money against what they've been awarded, and that at some point down the line, they are going to issue a report and get reimbursed by the federal government. Is that, am I thinking of this correctly? And so
right now
it's not an issue because that is down the road anyway, and they haven't been told to stop spending money. Is that correct?
Yes, that's a good synopsis. The other kinds of things that can't happen are if, for example, an agency has decided before the federal shutdown that they wanted to fund a project, we will not receive that funding until after the shutdown has completed. We also can't send bills into agencies that are affected. So it slows down the process, but it doesn't generally bring us to a halt.
When things like this happen, is there a lot of communication about this with Washington, D.C., or is it not even possible because there's not enough people to talk to?
Well, we cannot communicate with the agencies that are shut down currently. Mm-hmm. And so if they need to communicate with us, they will. But generally, we proceed knowing that we have funds authorized to spend. Mm-hmm. Until they issue what I talked about earlier, the stop work order, which generally does not happen.
No news is good news.
Yes, very much so.
And are we talking about mostly scientific research, or are there many different types of research that we're really looking at?
The vast majority of this is scientific research.
Mm-hmm. Is there concern about this possibly affecting research in the near future, or are people pretty confident that they can keep working?
At this point, I think it's just so early in the process that there has not been a lot of concern expressed. Mm-hmm. I think the concern comes with individuals that are close to the end of their award, and maybe they're expecting a second award to be given. So if their funds are running out and they were expecting to receive another amendment to the award, then they might experience some difficulties if their funds run out before the budget is passed.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't, at this point, we really don't have much of that happening. And if this goes on for a long time, the impact would be rolling out relatively slowly because there's a lot of different federal funding awards under these agencies with different performance periods, different budget amounts. And so this would be more of an incremental process of how the impact would be felt. The flow of these federal funds happens over time. When it arrives is not necessarily predictable, and it's really what happens over an entire year that matters. So we really hope that the government works together in order to move things forward before we do experience an impact.
Thank you so much for calling me at 5:30 on a Friday night.
Yes,
I really appreciate it.
Thank you for reaching out. Take care. Bye-bye.
And this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host, Ursula Rudenberg, and thanks for listening in. You were just hearing from Sarah Nusser, who is the Vice President for Research at Iowa State University. She was explaining that ISU research seems to be able to continue with very little interruption through the government shutdown, as well as the Ames lab. The Ames disease laboratory, the animal disease laboratory, however, is under the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and they have not fared as well. We've gotten some questions about what's happening to them. So we called them to find out, and we got a lot of phone messages basically saying, not answering our phone, not looking at our email, and sounding a little bit beleaguered, actually, to the point we wanted to record it to play on the air, but we weren't sure if that was legal or not. So they are not working. So we drove out to the animal disease labs. We were wondering exactly how that works. They do have a lot of animals out there. And we spoke to one of the guards and at the gate of the compound. And he gave us, he put us in contact with Ed Kirtlett, who's director of public affairs. And it's kind of a contradiction in terms. He said he's not working, so he can't really speak to us because he's not working. But he was kind enough to send us an email with a statement that said critical diagnostic testing for animal health emergencies and program diseases is continuing out at the center. And staff is there to ensure that animal vaccines and diagnostic test kits needed are approved for release by manufacturing companies, and there is staff to care for and feed the animals and ensure safety and security of the facility and the campus and the employees that are still working. Thank you to Ed Kirtlett for giving us that information and our thoughts with all the people that work for the USDA here in Ames.
How can I love spring if I've never known winter? The cold, gray dawn, the chills, the bone. Wood frozen like stone, first cracks, then splinters, surrendering to the dark grace of winter. Summer's bright and easy days, low late light, bees buzzing ways. Harvest plenty, leaves red and gold, another year is growing old. The sun and ice-bound rivers thaw and run. So are these days of warm delight worth the days of long black nights? Again, I love spring if I've never known winter. The cold gray dawn chills the bone. Wood frozen like stone, first cracks, then splinters, surrendering to the dark grace of winter, surrendering to the dark grace of winter.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host, Ursula Rudenberg, and that was The Dark Grace of Winter by Susan Osborne, who was, for many years, an outstanding local talent here in Ames. Going to see Susan was one of the things that was the pleasures of living around here. She has gone on to a distinguished career as a singer-songwriter and lives out in Washington State now and is very famous in Japan, I hear. So in the same spirit of appreciation for the dark of winter and its inevitable transition back into the light of spring, I'd like to share with you another local artist, who's my good friend Jane Graham from Nevada. Welcome to Local Talk, Jane.
Hello, Ursula.
Jane has a poem about winter.
Yes. My husband and I journey 30 miles to visit with my mother twice a week. And on our journey to her house, you go through the landscape driving, and I commented to Jim that, oh my gosh, you know, how things have changed so much. And I just said, you know, you have all of this bleakness around us, and then all of a sudden, when spring arrives, it is a total transformation. And I, you know, I need to write about that. And I haven't written anything since I was taking creative writing at DMAC back in the 90s. I can't even remember what year. But anyway, I was so struck by the total transformation of the landscape through these seasons that I thought that, you know, I need to get my pen out and jot something down. And so about a week or so later, I was up really early, about 5 o'clock in the morning or so, and so everything is still and nothing going on, and I didn't have the news on or anything. I thought, you know, I'm going to sit down and write this thing. And so the name of this poem is Nature's Resurrection. I hope the prospective readers and you, the listeners, come aware of, through my words, the imagery and rhythm and all of the senses that come with these two seasons. The poem is named Nature's Resurrection. From the lush shades of green to orange, yellow, and red, nature changes her pitch. She changes it to a brilliant crescendo of hues before her silence. The sun's rays are clouded now from shorter days. Cold rains fall, taking nature's drifting leaves. Down they fall, leaving their trees stripped and bare. The lush greenery of the earth now is brown and gray. Nature sweeps her cold, biting winds to blanket Earth's landscape with ice and snow. A new scene of sparkling blues and white cushions the bitter cold. The sun's rays are overpowered by clouds and long nights. Howling gales of snow bring nature to a halt in a frozen sleep. Hush. On, the days creep by. A prolonged rest in nature's stanza. Come March, something stirs. Icicles begin to melt. Drip, drip, drip. Deep drifts of snow recede to expose the earth's cleansing. A single red-winged blackbird perched on a bare stalk heralds her first song of rebirth. Soon more join to bring their chorus prelude. Spots of minty cinnabar emerge onto bushes of the woods. The bleat of cardinals sound. The once bare trees push buds of flowers and new tender leaves onto their branches. Perennial flowers burst. White, fuchsia, blues, purples, bright yellows. The air is filled with song from the assembled migrant birds orchestra, now back to their homelands. From dark deadness, life has come again. Nature is resurrected.
Thank you, Jane.
You're welcome.
Jane Graham, resident of Nevada, Iowa. Jane, you grew up in this area, right?
So you My hometown is Bon Durant, and I was a resident of Ames for over 20 years, but 25, almost 30 years. Connected with you as an artist.
That's right.
I'm now living 3 miles south of Nevada with my wonderful, eternal soulmate husband, Jim.
The poem you're describing is from the seasons that you've known.
All my life.
All your life. Thank you for expressing it so beautifully.
Oh, thank you for asking me to come.
The cold gray dawn chills the bone. Wood frozen like stone. First cracks, then splinters, surrendering to the dark grace of winter. Surrendering to the dark grace of winter.
Pat Schlarbaum has a story about the deer. I don't know about you, but we have a lot of deer in our backyard. They are with us, and their population has increased, but it is subject to a new threat in our area, which is called chronic wasting disease, or CWD. And since 2013, CWD has spread from northeast Iowa to now include southern Iowa. And biologist Tyler Harms is with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources, and he's working to keep track of the progression of this disease and efforts to slow its spread in Iowa. Pat Schlarbaum spoke with him about what's happening.
Tyler Harms, biologist with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. We're going to take on kind of a ponderous topic. Mr. Harms, chronic wasting disease, maybe the people have been hearing about CWD, and its impacts on our wild deer population. Again, thank you for coming in, Tyler.
It was my pleasure, Pat. Happy to be here.
For our listener, could you please kind of give us your impression of what people need to know about CWD and what it is?
Sure. So chronic wasting disease is a disease of the cervid family. So we're talking about deer and elk. And it was first found in the Midwest in the early 2000s in Wisconsin. So it's been around in Wisconsin for a number of years now. Found in Iowa in wild deer for the first time in the year 2013.
If we could you back up to where was CWD first diagnosed?
Sure.
Or detected?
First found in the late 60s in Colorado. So it's been out west for, you know, going on 50 years now. Yeah, so it's been around for quite some time, and there are a number of other comparable diseases. So chronic wasting disease is what's called a prion disease. A prion is a misfolded protein, so it's a naturally occurring protein in bodily systems, so to speak, that just misfolds, that causes this disease. And there are a number of comparable diseases in other animals as well. So mad cow would be an example in cattle, scrapie in sheep. There's actually a human prion disease called Creutzfeldt-Jakob syndrome. And so not necessarily unique to deer. Prion diseases are found in other animals as well.
The disease, I understand, is like 100% fatal.
It is indeed, yeah. It's once a deer has it, it's 100% fatal. The other kind of scary thing, I guess, that makes it challenging for us as biologists to track this disease is that it's, it takes about 2 years for physical symptoms to manifest themselves in deer that have this disease. And when those symptoms do show up, the deer just basically looks sick. And we know that deer get sick for lots of different reasons. They start to look thin, like they're not eating well. You know, they start to behave a little bit more erratically. And those symptoms are symptoms that could be caused by a number of different illnesses that deer have. And so it makes it very challenging for us to diagnose this disease based on physical symptoms alone. And so when, you know, sometimes we'll get calls or inquiries from folks, well, I have this sick deer in my backyard. Is it chronic wasting disease? And, you know, oftentimes it's very challenging for us to know that without actually testing the animal for the disease. And unfortunately, right now, the most effective way to do that is to dispatch the animal and pull tissue from that animal. So
apparently 2013 was a cornerstone year for CWD here in Iowa.
That's right, Pat. That was the first year that we found CWD in wild or free-ranging deer, and that was in Alma Key County in northeast Iowa, which was not too surprising to us because we knew that the disease was just across the river in Wisconsin.
And deer do swim the river.
They do indeed, yeah. And, you know, there are islands on the river, too, that aid in that movement across. And so first found in Alma Key County, found in Clayton County, just south of Alma Key County, a couple years later. And then now just this last year, we had one deer test positive in southeast Wayne County, which is south central Iowa, right around the town of Seymour. So 28 deer total, wild deer that we've had tested positive for the disease in Iowa. 25 of those have been up in Alma Key County, two of those in Clayton County, and then the one last year in Wayne County.
Yeah, and let's point out right off, it has not been detected of transferring from deer to humans.
That's correct.
At this time.
That's correct. Yeah, there's no risk. That's one of the things that we talk a lot about with our deer hunters that are out there harvesting our deer now that we have chronic wasting disease and wild deer in the state is that there's currently no risk to our hunters in consuming the meat. However, that said, you know, we're constantly learning more with the science. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention actually highly recommends that hunters get their meat tested prior to consumption, and that if the harvest animal does test positive, they strongly recommend that the meat from that animal not be consumed.
For an extended discussion on CWD, tune in Wednesday, or go to www.iowadnr.com/deerhunting/deer-disease-information. We'll learn more on Wednesday.
And that was Pat Schlarbaum talking with Tyler Harms, biologist with the Department of Natural Resources, speaking about chronic wasting disease among Iowa's deer. And there'll be a full version of that interview on Wednesday's Local Talk this week. Thank you, Pat. Let's close out the show with another poem. Jane Graham is here from Ames, and she read a poem prior about winter. Having discussed winter and nature, government shutdowns, and deer disease. So this has been a very eclectic show. Let's end with family. Jane, you wrote a poem about family, so that's a nice way to round out.
Let's the name of this poem is TikTok. Childhood memory, a clock.
A few years ago, I walked into a clock store, and I bought a kitchen clock. You know, a kitchen clock that it makes the tick-tock. And I remember as I was leaving, he looked at me and he said, at some point in everybody's life, they buy a clock.
Yeah. Okay, tick-tock. I'm just home from Grandma's funeral, collapsing onto my couch. I feel tired and emotionally drained. Covering my eyes with my hand, my thoughts turn to memories of my grandparents. My gaze turns to the antique mantel clock I bought several years ago that is like the one Grandma and Grandpa had on their living room desk. I go to the mantel, open the encasement door, pick up the key and wind the clock. Tick-tock, tick-tock, tick-tock. The sound turns my memory back. I'm spending the night with my favorite grandparents. The evening is spent next to Grandma's side, looking through her family photo albums. Her gnarled hands carefully turn the musty, smelling pages as she points and, as she points out the pictures of my mother and my uncles, telling stories about them all the while. I see my mother cuddling a basket full of puppies. My uncle Roy, standing stiffly in his army uniform the day before being stationed in Japan. And Uncle Bill, peering from a hospital bed recovering from an accident at boot camp. Grandpa, a slight, wiry Irishman, settles down in his rocking chair to read for a while, but soon is snoring, making little puffing noises through his mouth. The clock's ticking mark the hours as Grandpa dozes and Grandma and I quietly chat. Grandpa rouses from his sleep only to notice, oh, it's bedtime. So he strolls over to the desk to perform the nightly ritual of winding the clock. I am to sleep on the couch this night, so a clean, crisp sheet is tidily arranged for my bed, and I'm tucked in with a light blanket spread over me. My last glance lands across the room to the empty rocking chairs, the desk, and its solemn clock. The sweet, fresh scent of the sheet and pillowcase envelop me as the lights are turned off. All is dark and still, except for the muffled tick-tock, now saturating the echoes and echoing through the house. On and on goes the cadence. I count the tocks, listening intently to their changing pitch. Then I hear clink, clunk, chung of the grinding gears. Bong, bong, bong. 11 times. Then tick-tock, tick-tock, tick-tock. And on until I am lulled to sleep by the clock's timely song. Mournful chimes return me to my living room. Time marched on, Grandma and Grandpa. As I grew up, you grew old, and now you're both gone. The clock on my mantle stands as the memoir of you and me in those simple childhood days. The clock's hushed voice summons the remembrance of your snowy white hair, Grandma, and your Irish witty ways, Grandpa, as I hear tick-tock, tick-tock, tick-tock.
Thank you, Jane. It was Jane Graham with a testimony to family. And you have been listening to Local Talk on KHY Community Radio. We've covered a wide range of topics and feelings during this show, ending with an emotional tribute to the power of memory of family. So thank you for being with us today as we've kind of all over the place here to start out the new year. And thank you to Cynthia McClure, who has been our trusty engineer today. And our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. We also heard Susan Osborne's Grace of the Dark Night of Winter. And we heard a little bit of music from Cirque du Soleil at the beginning. And as we say at the end of every show, Local Talk is actually a training program where everyday people are learning to be street reporters. So this show is certainly not a perfect presentation, but it does have a lot of human element, even though it doesn't have the polish of commercial radio. But I promise you, You will learn so much about the world we live in here in Central Iowa on this show and who and what makes it up. And I'm sure that you, like myself, will continue to be able to gain a deeper sense of love and respect for the people and the things that make up our community. Actually, some people tell us they look forward to hearing our mistakes on Local Talk. We have a fan club who are based on our mistakes. So I guess people enjoy seeing a little bit behind the curtain. And we certainly have plenty of that, although we really try not to do that. But having said all that, all of us on Local Talk want to thank you if you've donated to KHOI this past winter. Your donation, every single one of your donations, is very much appreciated. It's seen and appreciated. Really counts. We've got about $650 more to go to reach $30,000, which we would really, really like to at the end of this membership drive. So if you have been thinking about donating but haven't done it yet, this would be a great time to do it. And I'm sure that we can make it to $30,000. So thank you for listening. Please remember that your participation and support as audience is what makes Local Talk meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.